Money, Riches, and Wealth is sponsored by the Financial Consulate.
Freedom!
This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. It's time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
This is Drew Tignanelli here with Money, Riches, and Wealth, and Tom Bonvasutto. Thomas, how are you?
Very well, Drew, very well.
Did you bring a bottle of Chianti for us to share while we were doing the show?
No, I was looking for a nice blend.
A blend, all right. You know, Derek gave me one recently. It was a Tuscan red blend, and it was a classic Italian everyday drinking red wine. And it's a unique wine, you know. In other words, it's not, you know, it's not like a really super, super good wine, but it's certainly not a bad wine in any way, shape, or form. It's just a very light but hearty with a good acidity in it and a great oak flavor. That's a classic just blend of a drinking wine that they would sit and drink all day long.
All day long, exactly.
Absolutely, you know, and so... Anyway, I appreciate Derek giving that to me a couple week or so ago. And we're on an open show tonight, right?
We are, indeed.
So one of the things that I wanted to just address before we do this open show, it wasn't necessarily a Drew's view, but I'm sure that we probably had a few listeners last week who were probably thinking, what are you doing interviewing this guy? And you know, he's into this global warming stuff and all this, and he's not only into it, he's like, basically he said a couple things like, you know, no idiot would. He didn't say it in those words, but that was basically that's what we heard, you know. No idiot would think that there isn't global warming going on. But you know what I thought is that, you know, I wanted to interview him because it's listening and hearing all the things that people and governments are doing because of the, whether it's true or not true, it's the fact is that there's a ton of money moving in different directions because of this concept. And, you know, it's important as an investor to understand what others are doing. Whether you agree or disagree with them, you know.
Oh, exactly. You want to know both sides of the story, you know, other perspectives, because that'll inform your perspective.
Yeah. You know, and I was thinking about, what was it, about 30 or 40 years ago when I was first driving, we bought leaded gas, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And,
yeah,
you know, they came up with this great idea. We're going to do these catalytic converters, and we're going to make the cars all this much more expensive and everything.
Yep.
And it's going to turn into CO2, which is a totally harmless gas and so forth. And now here it is, you know, 30 years later, and they're saying, whoa, we're killing ourselves. Now we got to get rid of the CO2, you know, and so forth. So I think government's funny. That's my point. That's my point I'm trying to make here.
Yep.
Government is funny.
Funny. That's an interesting term.
That's about the best I could use here on the radio. Funny. You know, they come up with these brilliant ideas, and then they realize a year later, 5 years later, 30 years later, well, maybe that wasn't the most brilliant idea, you know? And now we've got to fix what we destroyed, you know? And that's why I'm a big fan of let the markets figure these things out. Don't need government to figure these things out. Markets will figure them out very quickly.
Yep, and your point was, I mean, last week people started asking me, why'd you have that guy on? What did he have to do with, you know, finances and what you guys talk about? But, you know, as you point out, the topic affects, you know, whenever you get into any topic, it's understanding, you know, what's going on, what's the money, the regulation, how are things flowing, and how does that then therefore inform our decisions?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, you just listen to some of the things he was talking about, some of the things they're thinking of doing, some of the, you know, lawsuits of countries who want to sue the United States because we're a big CO2 producer. And I'll bet you they'll get millions or billions and trillions of dollars out of people because, you know, anyway, it's interesting.
Yep.
We're on an open show tonight. And so our phone number is 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680. If you want to call in and ask your question, and you can ask it about anything. It could be about stocks or bonds or IRAs or 401ks or What else could we talk about? Income taxes, estate planning, elder care, you know, the gamut. We have in our opinion, a professional financial advisor should be able to talk the gamut of anything dealing with personal finances, and there should be nothing that could affect your personal finances that they cannot address. That's one of the purposes of doing this show, is demonstrating what we believe a truly professional financial advisor should do. It's not about selling something. It's about helping the public and answering their questions as they call in, and demonstrating what a true professional financial advisor should be.
Yep.
And if you have a professional advisor that can't do that, then in my opinion, you don't have a professional financial advisor. You might have somebody who calls themselves a financial advisor, but they may not be if they can't run the gamut of any topic dealing with personal finances.
That's right. Well, and earlier today, thanks to Molly in our office, I got a tweet.
Oh, we do have a new tweet. That's right. The FinCon... At the FinCon,
right? At the FinCon.
At the FinCon. FinCon. At the FinCon is our handle. I guess that's what they call it, right?
That's my understanding.
A handle. There you go. And so if you want to get on to our follow the consulate, and we put these shows out in podcasts because maybe you miss a show or two and you want to hear what was the topic last week. What were they talking about? What interesting things? Or if you just want to read the articles that we write, and we're constantly writing articles and publishing them in different journals and so forth. One that I'm writing right now is about Social Security maximization, the good and the bad of it.
Yeah.
So anyway, let's go to Bill in Lithicum. Bill. How can we help you?
Hi, Drew. How are you?
Doing great, and you?
I'm doing just fine. I want to get your opinion on buying actual gold or silver, buying the actual metal. Is it a good financial decision? And if so, how would you go about buying it? And I'm going to hang up so I can hear you.
Okay, that'd be good. Well, that makes it easy because I have to go on a break soon. But, so the question is buying silver and gold, and he was talking about physical silver and gold. Now, the question I always ask when somebody says, I want to buy silver or gold, the question I always ask is, why are you buying it? Are you buying it because you want it as an investment that I could make money if the price goes higher? Or are you buying it because you're concerned about the world economic system and you want gold or silver as a backup? You know, in case the dollar becomes worthless or something like that.
Right.
So if you're buying it for the latter, you have to buy physical. Yet I wouldn't get carried away with that because I don't think the dollar is going away anytime soon. There may come a day in the future, but I don't think it's going away anytime soon, especially when you look at countries like Mozambique and Argentina, who have done everything you could possibly do to blow a country up, and yet they still have Argentine pesos and whatever the Mozambiques use.
Right.
They're still out there, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't expect the dollar to disappear. But if that's your concern, you have to buy physical gold or silver. If you're just buying it as an investment, then in my opinion, you buy a financial product like SLV for silver. Or if you want to buy gold, I would stick with Central Fund of Canada, CEF, which is a closed-end fund that owns 75% gold bars and 25% silver bars in a vault in Canada. And there's a very specific reason. This gold and silver does not change on a daily basis, not like SLV and GLD. Now, the reason I like SLV is because I believe silver is an incredible long-term opportunity. Silver traded for $53 a share, an ounce, in 1980. It traded down to $3 an ounce in 1998, and it went back to $49 an ounce in 2011, and now it's back down to $21 an ounce. You know, and as Jim Rogers always say, don't buy something that's trading near its high. Trade something that's way down from its high.
Right.
And so silver's down about 60-70% from its recent high and its all-time high. Gold is only down about 30%, or, you know, I guess it's about 30% from its all-time high. Yeah. So, you know, I would buy silver if I wanted it just strictly as an investment, but I wouldn't buy a lot of it. What do we own, 2% in our portfolios?
Yeah, directly.
Through SLV.
Via SLV, sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, that's what I would think about, you know, but you have to determine why am I buying it. Anyway, we have to take a pause, right, Noah? And we're coming back with, or we're going to Maggie Hunter and Traffic, and then we're going to come back Money, Riches, and Wealth.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
And we're back, Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're going to our callers right away. Dave in Cockeysville, how can we help you?
Hi, I've always been curious to know who buys these bonds that Baltimore County sells. The public has to vote to approve the purchase of the bonds. I think the last big one was $255 million. I think they're tax-free, but who's entitled to buy those?
You want to answer that, Tom?
Well, yeah, I mean,
it's a tough question because it's. I bet you every county in Maryland does it, but I know Baltimore County specifically is relying on these bonds to make themselves quote fiscally sound.
Yeah, there are folks out there. I mean, dealers are have the bonds, and you're right. Every county is bonds. You know, they might have a bonds for golf course. They have tax revenue bonds. You know, the toll bonds, road bonds, school bonds, as you point out, and their different counties get ratings from the rating agencies. It determines a little bit of how those bonds are priced out there. But the bonds are bought by individuals like yourself.
Mutual funds.
And then mutual funds are big buyers of that.
Banks.
You know, there are, you know, mutual funds that are Maryland bond funds specifically, and then national bond funds. So, you know, the local firms buy them, and they get traded. You know, some people hold them.
I suppose these buyers are lined up when they know that these bonds are going to be issued because they're tax-free.
Right.
And there's technically AAA bond-rated Baltimore County, which contributed, well, I don't want to go into that, $100,000 to Moody's, which I thought was kind of funny, who's the bonding agency. But I wanted to know who would be buying these things.
Hard to imagine that there's constantly buyers for all the bonds that are issued on a daily basis, but there are.
Yeah.
It's
amazing.
Well,
because you have constant maturities. You know, bonds are maturing. They've got to, you know, replenish the supply that's there. So there is a demand for mutual funds that are out there, and then the individuals that want to hold them. And, you know, tax-free bonds have been more attractive, especially as, you know, as the yields on treasuries have dropped. And then on top of that, you know, there's the tax rate's going higher.
What yields would they pay?
Oh, they could be tiny right now. They could be as high as 3%, say, for a 20-year bond or something of that sort, to as low as 0.25% for a 1-year bond.
Yeah.
So, if that.
Yeah, they vary.
So they're pretty lucrative because they're tax-free.
Right. Well, they're only lucrative if you're in a very high tax bracket and they're tax-free. You know, so I saw a client just recently. She had $30,000 of income, Tom. She had all of her money in municipal bonds.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense.
Right. You know.
Right.
Anyway,
right.
Dave, good call.
Yeah.
Good question. And it's a complicated question because it's hard to understand how, you know, all these counties are issuing hundreds of millions of bonds, and yet they keep getting bought up all the time.
Yep.
Anyway, we're going to Lita in Howard County. Hello.
Hi there.
Yeah.
Hi.
Hey.
My question is, I have long-term health insurance. I've had it for about 13 years. I'm 65. And they, almost every year, they're raising it a couple hundred dollars.
Right.
So now they want me, they want to raise it again, or for me to, like right now it's good for 10 years. They said, you know, you can knock it down to 5 years, or you can, you know, change the daily rate, but at that rate, I'm not going to be able to afford to keep paying it every year. So I'm in a quandary.
And just because you said it was originally 10 years, I'm going to guess your company's Genworth.
No, 10 years that they cover me.
Yeah.
While in a nursing home.
Well, you know, it's typical that a 10-year policy, Genworth was the one that was most common to offer the 10-year policy. That's why.
Well, It's John Hancock.
Oh, John Hancock. That's unusual for them. Usually send them in a five-year issue. You know, 5 years is what we typically recommend at this point in time because a lot of Medicaid planning can be done in 5 years. Mm-hmm. So, you know, to have a 10-year policy, if you're having a hard time affording it, I think you won't be hurting yourself. You won't be taking too much more risk on by dropping it down to a five-year policy.
Well, that's fine, but the problem is, they're going to raise it a couple hundred dollars every year because right now it's going to stay the same if I lower it to 5 years, which is fine, but, you know, I can't.
I understand what you're saying, but, you know, long-term care, when you bought the insurance, you know, there was what's called a guarantee issue, but the premium was not guaranteed to be level. And the only way they can raise your policy, Lita, is if they can prove to the insurance commissioner that they need to raise the rates for people who were 52 years of age, which is the age you bought that policy at. And so they're not isolating you specifically.
Oh, I know.
They're going in after and they're saying 52-year-olds ratings, we need to go up another couple hundred. Now, I'll bet you had 10 or 12 years of no premium increases, and it's just been in the last 4 or 5 years.
Yes.
And there's a very good reason for that, okay? There's two reasons. Number one, they realized the mistake they made when they priced the policies 15 years ago, number one. And number two, they thought they were going to get 5-7% on their bond portfolio, and now they're only getting 2-3% on their bond portfolio, and that has dramatically changed the pricing. And here's my guess. My guess is that sometime in the next year or two, if it hasn't already hit, that they're going to have those policies priced properly, and you're not going to keep getting hit every year.
Oh, okay.
That's my guess. I can't guarantee it in any way, shape, or form. Because I think interest rates will start going higher, and I think that the long-term healthcare companies understand the risk better today than they did 15 years ago.
Yeah, they just asked for a 93% increase. They got 15.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah, you know, I don't understand that, and I don't know what kind of policy you have in the sense of, you know, do you have a zero-day wait or a 90-day wait?
90.
Okay, so that's good. Do you have a 5% increase or a cost of living increase?
That I'm not sure of.
See, that's a big part of your policy is your inflation increase in that policy.
Mm-hmm.
That's a major expense in the policy. So if every year that long-term care benefit is going up by 5% compound, that can raise the cost of the policy dramatically. You know, one of the things we've been using is a cost of living increase, which can be anywhere from 1 to 5% per year, but it doesn't have to be 5% every year.
So what should I look at when I look at the policy to see if it's...
You look under the inflation rider. What's the inflation rider? Is it 5% compound? Is it 3% compound? Is it 5% simple, 3% simple, or is it cost of living compound?
And which is the best?
Well, that's a very difficult question, Lita. I wish they could answer it. You know, what we're using right now is the cost of living compound just to keep the cost in line. But, you know, the 5% is a great benefit if you have it and you can afford to keep it. It's a great benefit. But if you're struggling with paying the premium, then, you know, you might want to look at one of these alternatives. You know, it would be great if you had that policy reviewed by somebody who's objective and not going to try to sell you another policy, okay?
Right.
Yeah. Because that's a great policy. You should not get rid of that policy. You just got to figure out how to modify it a little for yourself, okay?
But it's only $171 a day, which...
$171 a day is not bad. Do you have, you know, if you have good Social Security, do you have pension, do you have assets that you can self-insure a portion of the long-term care risk? That's what you have to think about with long-term care. Trying to insure 100% of the long-term care risk is not absolutely the best thing to do either.
Right.
All right?
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
All right, lady. You take care. And we have to take another pause. And we'll be right back with Glenn, who's going to talk about retirement and working and drawing dollars. Anyway, Maggie, take it away.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
And we're back. Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're here on an open show, Thomas.
That's right.
It means so, anyone can ask what they want.
Was that Bobby Darin? Was that Bobby Darin? Okay, Mac the Knife. All right.
Very good. I had no idea.
Yeah.
I didn't even know what till you said Mac the Knife. I knew he was going to said it and say it in a little bit after you said that, but he never said it, did he?
No.
Mac never said Mac the Knife in the song. You clicked it off before he got there.
Fancy gloves, though, where's old Maggie Heath, babe? So there's never...
I'm going, Noah. You still didn't get there, but I'm going. Glenn in Cadenceville, how can we help you? Glenn, are you still there? I think he's gone. You would have heard the... Oh, great. He's going to beat up on me. Jack!
Yeah.
Jack Frost, I'll bet.
What?
It's Jack Frost, I'll bet.
Say that again?
What's your... No, I was thinking you were somebody else. But you,
oh, no, I'm Jack from Towson.
Jack from Towson. Are you going to beat up on me on global warming?
No, not at all. Something you mentioned right in the beginning of the show.
Okay.
About global warming and all that. And it dawned... I was thinking about... I've read a couple times about Al Gore, and he's made $50, $70 million or something on carbon credits or something, and it's tied into global warming.
Oh, yeah.
Give me a real short explanation of what he's doing.
So basically, one of the concepts that the government said is we want to regulate the amount of carbon emission in the world, and so... One thing liberals understand is that markets are real good at distributing a limited supply of something, okay? So what they do is they say, okay, we only want umpteen, you know, tons of carbon dioxide being emitted into the atmosphere from our country. So therefore, we're going to issue these amount of tonnage of carbon dioxide emissions, and if you want to emit carbon dioxide in your company, you're going to have to buy these. And then if you can't afford to buy them, then you're going to have to figure out how to emit something other than carbon dioxide. So
here, let me stop you right there. You mean the government sells this thing to companies?
Well, they sell the amount of emission of carbon dioxide onto an exchange, and let's call it that they're willing to allow certain amount of carbon dioxide emitted, and any company that wants to emit it has to go and buy these, what do they call them, carbon dioxide?
The credits?
What did you call them, Jack?
Credits.
Credits.
Credits. You have to buy these credits to be able to emit this dioxide out. And so it regulates a limited supply, and, you know, and it's sold, and these trade like a stock, you know. And if a lot of people want to emit more, they have to figure out how to buy it from others and who have them. And those people, if they get them, now they can't emit as much, but now they have more money to maybe change the process of how they're doing something to emit less.
So Gore's tied into the government people that issue these things.
Yeah, well, he's not tied into the government people. He's actually trading these. He's buying them as they come to market. He's buying them, and then he's selling them to others. Now, who knows? Maybe he gets an inside deal, and he gets these up front at the lowest government price that they're selling them for, and then he pawns them off to other people for a profit, and it's an... And it's, who knows? I'm not sure. I've never traded.
I'm getting a funny smell, Drew.
I'm not sure.
That doesn't smell right.
I'm not sure how they price the carbon credits when they initially sell them. Once they do, then they're traded between people just like a stock, you know? It's a supply and demand.
Huh. Huh. Okay. So, that gives me more understanding.
And it's kind of trades.
On.
It trades like a commodity, mm-hmm. like corn trades right. on the commodity exchange.
It's not traded on the commodity exchange.
I think it could be. I think it is traded on this. I think it is traded on the CME.
Yeah.
Really?
The Chicago Mercantile Exchange.
Yeah.
I think that's the exchange that trades them, but I can't guarantee it because I've never traded them. And
I'll Google it and find out. Yeah. I was curious because I've read that several times.
Well, here's somebody calling in.
Huh?
Somebody's calling in about carbon credits, so maybe they know something about
it,
too.
Okay. All right, thanks.
Oh, she has a question, too.
It's not Al Gore.
Al Gore, flying around the world, emitting carbon dioxide, driving his SUVs, and warming his swimming pool up and saving us from global warming all at the same time.
Exactly.
All right, Jackie, take care. That's a good call. Sheila, how can we help you?
No, I don't know anything about I didn't know. I thought it was just some sort of theory. I had no idea.
No. They actually trade these things.
But is it a government program? Our government has bought into this stuff and they sell carbon credits? Or what happened?
You know, I'm not sure. Are carbon credits traded in the U.S.? I know they're traded in many other countries. I know that Europe has a big carbon credit trading exchange. But I'm not sure if the U.S. Are you looking it up right now, Tom?
I'm trying, but it's a little slow.
I know that there is a market for carbon credits.
It would only be if the government made you do it, right? You wouldn't do this voluntarily, right?
It's when the government decides how much carbon dioxide they want to have emitted in their country, and then they issue these credits on an exchange, and they sell them as an initial public offering, basically. And then companies who want to emit carbon dioxide buy them. And if you can't afford to get them, you have to figure out how to emit less. And if you can afford to buy them, you can emit all you want.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I mean, this is what I was talking about and why I want to, you know, learn more about from these people who believe this stuff, because they're going to do all these kind of crazy things.
My goodness.
You just have to understand, you know, well, how can I possibly take advantage of this stuff?
Goodness, maybe we won't be able to breathe out or something.
I don't know, you know, all kinds of things emit carbon dioxide.
That's right.
We don't want to get into all of it.
Every night, all your trees emit carbon dioxide. We're going to have to cut them all down? I mean, goodness.
No.
Or buy
actually,
the
trees emit oxygen.
To have a tree.
No.
Oh,
no, yeah, you're right. They take in the carbon dioxide, and the trees emit oxygen. That's right.
That's right.
So in the daytime, they do oxygen. At night, they do carbon dioxide.
Oh, do they?
I didn't know that.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, I guess that's logical because there's no sun in
exactly.
the evening. So that's fascinating. And the ocean absorbs the carbon dioxide, right? And
that I don't know.
Well, that's
just
what he even said that last week. He said that last week, so
okay.
We know that it's sort of true. But anyway, you know, I don't understand. You can't change these guys, you know, and
well,
so
can,
you might as well learn to live with
you know,
them.
That if it's a way to make money, but it's a way to make money that's sort of a little insane, I think. But anyway.
All
well,
right.
Thank you very much. I had no idea that there was anything official about carbon credits. I thought it was just something Al Gore talked about. But
No. They're definitely traded in Europe for sure. I know that much.
All right. Well, thanks a lot. This is
Take
very
care.
Interesting.
All right. Okay. Bye. Isn't it like a tax for emitting carbon dioxide? Yeah, well, that's exactly what it is. It's a tax for emitting carbon dioxide, but it's done in the sense of exchange and credits and so forth. And then the government brings in all this money to help regulate and control the emission of carbon dioxide in our country.
Yep.
But, that's kind of crazy stuff. So anyway, Noah, are you still there? Yes, I am still there. Noah is still there. Mark Thibodeau and weather, and we have Nova. Well, we do have somebody on the line, but we don't know what they're calling in about. And if you want to get online, 410-922-6680. We'll be right back. Money, riches, wealth. Take it away, Mark. All right, we're back. Money, riches, and wealth. And that was Tom. Who is that group?
I'm guessing the Beach Boys.
Eddie Cochran.
Okay.
I knew you were wrong there. Jeez. Go ahead, tell everyone a little bit more about these carbon credits and how Al Gore may be making even more money off them than we even speculated.
Well, you know, and I think, you know, after Al Gore, you know, created the internet, you know, then he went on to, you know, environmental issues, but basically, you know, from what we've been able to gather, and as Drew mentioned, we don't trade in these, haven't followed it that closely. But, you know, there are companies, say a steel producer out there, they produce emissions. Utilities produce emissions. And so they're given a quota by the government of how much emissions they can produce. And if they're going to produce over that, they go out into the marketplace to get these credits, and they buy it from somebody that has the credit. Well, often what's happening, it seems, is these environmental groups are going out and saying planting trees to help reduce emissions. They plant enough trees that they get a carbon credit, and then the other guy needs a credit to get below his quota or get to his quota. He goes out and he buys that in the marketplace.
Yeah, so Al could be planting trees and then hugging them and then getting the credit and selling them and then really hugging the tree.
That's right.
Right?
He's going to be really happy.
Anyway, Al's happy. And anyway, Pete in Centerville, how can we help you?
Hey, I want to tell you a story about this electricity business now. You know, these electricity companies, by 2020, because they're mandated by Maryland law now, thanks to O'Malley and your legislature, that they're supposed to be buying 20% of their electricity by alternative sources. This is wind and solar. Okay?
Pete, don't get me started on Martin, please.
What?
Don't get me started on Martin. Just kidding.
On mining?
On Martin. Martin O'Malley.
Oh, okay.
Don't get me started on him. Okay,
anyway,
go ahead.
This is what you got to do. The electric companies are not allowed to be in the production of electricity. They have to buy it from the grid. So private companies that get credits, like there's a 30% tax credit now for going out and installing solar panel farms.
Yeah.
Now, I have a company comes to me and says, we want to rent 150 acres from you. And we'll fill it up with solar panels, and we're going to pay you $200,000 a year for 20 years.
Not bad.
Now, I said, okay, that's fine. Now, you prove it to me how you're going to be able to pay me this, make enough money so you're going to be able to pay me. But they haven't come to me, prove to me yet how they're going to be able to pay me. So, I mean, this is the thing. Now, they would get a 30% tax credit. Wealthy
right.
Investors could buy into this thing and get a 30% tax credit for putting this thing up. And then the electric company has to buy whatever electricity they have available from their solar farm, or the same thing with wind farms, at prevailing rates.
Right.
Now, these companies can't survive without government assistance.
No, absolutely.
This is the gift to this thing, that they can't make it on their own. They have to get government assistance, which we pay for.
Well, that's what Warren.
We have to subsidize these people to subsist.
That's what Warren Buffett is doing. Warren Buffett has bought a giant solar farm, and the money he's just getting from the government, I've heard, is alone going to make his deal profitable.
Yeah, but we don't need this. There's plenty of natural gas out there.
Whether we need it or not, Pete, this is what these lunatics that people have elected into office are doing. And you know, and they're convinced that they're right. And I agree with you wholeheartedly. Why don't we just give natural gas an effort? We've got abundance of it. We've got it coming out of our ears.
And it doesn't need any subsidy.
Oh, absolutely.
It doesn't need any subsidy.
And you know what will happen if you don't subsidize the alternative energies? What will happen is sooner or later, either you're going to run out of fossil fuels mm-hmm. that their price goes up, that all of a sudden the alternative becomes so affordable that they come slamming down in price, or the alternatives have to come down in price to compete with the fossil fuels. That's what the market does. But these politicians think they know better than the market. And that's what drives me crazy.
You should
see. The solar panel will never compete because the solar panel only produces when the sun shines.
Well, that may be true, Pete, but, you know, innovation can come up with the ways to figure out how to make the solar panel compete, but they're not going to come up with it if government subsidizes it. That's the problem.
Right.
Well, that's right, but that's the liberal way.
That is the liberal way, and they don't understand it. If they just get out of the way, all of their little wonderful thoughts and ideas will happen, but they believe that the marketplace is evil.
All about control. They want to control you.
Oh, absolutely. They want the nanny state completely. It's a, you know, look, Friedrich Hayek talked about it. Friedrich Hayek, right? Did I say that right? Yeah. Friedrich Hayek. Yeah. Hayek. Talked about this in 1940, I think he wrote the book. How can I forget the name of the book?
It was George Orwell's Animal Farm.
Right. You know, right.
1984, George Orwell.
The Road to Serfdom. If anybody's never read The Road to Serfdom, read it. Hayek told us exactly 70 or 80 years ago exactly what is going to happen today and is happening today. Cradle to grave government. They want to control everything about our lives. They want to tell us how much we can drink in soda pops. They want to tell us, you know, what we can do and how we can do it. And I'm tired of it. I'm personally tired of it.
I'm tired of it. Tired of it too. But this is Bloomberg who's running around. He wants to control everything, right?
Yeah, well, you know, and Martin O'Malley thinks he's going to be president. And, you know, I used to laugh at that 5 years ago, I would have laughed at Martin O'Malley thinking he could be president. But after Barack Obama got elected president, heck, they might vote for O'Malley for all I know.
No, listen, Obama's not president. Obama is only the guy wearing the suit. The people that are really calling the shots are Michelle Obama and Valerie Jarrett.
All right, Pete.
Read Ed Klein's new book. He tells you all about it.
That's true. All right, buddy. You take care. And you make that. You might as well sell that land out. You know, let them rent your land and get $200,000. You know, that's kind of like windfall. Yep. You know, if he can get the $200,000, what the heck? Go put them on there. Just as long as you can prove you can pay me. You know.
Right. Yeah. That's what they're all promising.
Yeah. Because if they can't pay him, then he's stuck with a whole bunch of solar panels all over his property he's got to figure out how to get rid of.
Yep.
But, you know, if he can figure out that these guys can afford to pay him, you know, what the heck? Yep. You know, put them up.
We had solar panels back in the 80s on our house up in New York, and there was an attempt back then when we were going through the oil crisis. And it was expensive, and it didn't work. Now, the technology got better, but it's still not there. It's still not able to really produce, and without these subsidies, as you point out, and the government just keeps getting in the way, and they don't let the natural market forces work.
Yeah, you know what would have happened if the government didn't provide subsidies? The solar companies would continue to do research to figure out how they can get it down to a competitive cost with fossil fuels, or fossil fuels would have gone up to catch up with the solar, and then the solar would have overtaken them. Sooner or later, it's what markets do.
That's right. That's right.
Anyway, enough of that, Thomas. It's my birthday month, and I want to be at peace. But we have to wait until the end of the month to truly celebrate birthday month.
Yep.
July 31st. Remember that. We should have people delivering gifts to the studio for my birthday.
We'll be looking for that. Well, we got 4th of July in a couple of days, so happy 4th.
All right. This is Drew Tignanelli saying God bless.